Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil. Corner, llegó el gol de Olivier Giroud. Marca el Arsenal, marca Olivier Giroud. Gol de los Gunners.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, with James from Gunnerblog. Goodly evening to you.
Goodly evening, podcasting by dark. Who would ever thought?
It's weird and spooky and slightly arousing. What can I tell you?
It does feel more intimate.
It does.
You know, it's a more romantic hour, certainly.
It is. I'm sitting here in my robe.
Lovely.
I'm not really.
Oh, okay. I was enjoying that image, but no problem.
I was just trying to turn you on.
Well, it was effective.
Oh, good. I'm glad I still have it.
You do.
I'm fine. I've been out all day, you see.
Doing what?
I was at the All-Ireland football final in Croke Park.
Now, forgive my ignorance. Is that football, or what's going on there?
Gaelic football,
right.
Gaelic football, where you can also pick the ball up with your hands, but you kick it a lot as well.
I see. The kind of football that Jake Livermore was playing this weekend.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, pretty much almost exactly that. Dublin were playing Mayo.
Indeed, Mayo. Okay, and who came out on top?
Nobody. It was a draw. There's going to have to
and
be
that's
a replay.
Allowed?
Yeah, that's allowed. Oh. There wasn't even extra time. None of that. So first game ends like Dublin had the ball in the Mayo half. They had like a sideline ball. They could have just kept the ball. But the guy decided, I'm going to try and seal the deal here. I'm going to go for a point. Dublin were leading by a point at that stage inside the last 60 seconds. He went for the point, missed. Mayo took the ball, whacked it upfield, and scored a very good point themselves. And it ended all square. So now there's going to be a replay in 2 days' time. Or two weeks' time. Two days is a little bit difficult.
And presumably you're back in Dublin in this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge aficionado of Gaelic football, but obviously I prefer Dublin to win. But, it was nice to go to a sporting event where I wasn't hugely invested in it. I wanted Dublin to win, but if they didn't win, it wasn't going to, like, ruin my day. But it was nice to watch the sport. What's your disclosure here?
My disclosure is that my family originally are from Mayo, so really I should be pitching against you here. I should be rooting for a Mayo win in this.
Yeah, I think it's been a number of years since Mayo won the All-Ireland football final, so there was a lot of support for them. Dublin are a bit, you know, I don't want to say.
If they were football clubs, who are they? In Premier League terms, who are they, Dublin and Mayo?
I guess Dublin would be like, in a way, Manchester United at their peak because everybody wants Mayo to win, you know, that way. So anyone but United, it's a bit anyone but Dublin. And Mayo, I don't really know because, I haven't been paying a huge amount of attention, but they were very good. And there was quite a bit of violence during the game. That was enjoyable. There were guys punching each other and there was off the ball stuff and shenanigans. And it was good from that point of view because it's such a huge pitch. The ref is down one end and the way that the game works, the players, they stay in their positions quite a lot. So the forwards stay like, right up in the opposition area and they're man marked. So pretty much everybody's man marked and you can see them going, you cunt. Fuck off, cunt. And he's going, I'm not a cunt. You're the cunt. Fuck off, cunt. And they're just giving the sledging and grappling and like throwing slaps at each other. It's tremendously entertaining.
It does sound so, although it sounds as if I could never attend one of these games. Surely I would get caught in the crossfire and horrifically hurt one way or the other.
Nobody in the crowd got in any way damaged. But I wouldn't put it past you to do that. So, well, maybe we can discuss this in 2 weeks' time. You can be the Mayo guy. and I'll be the Dublin guy. And,
I'll tune in.
Yeah, tune in. It's on Sky Sports. Sky Sports have all the rights to Gaelic football.
Really?
Yeah, they do. Do you not remember, like, I think they got them maybe 2 years ago. And have you ever watched hurling?
Yes, a bit of hurling. I have
all right, so hurling, if people don't know what hurling is the other Gaelic game, apart from football, where you have a stick and a ball, and the guys just fucking smash the ball with their sticks and smash each other with their sticks. And it's an incredibly exciting, incredibly skillful game. You know, they're pulling this little ball down out of the air and they're firing it over the bar from 60, 70 yards. It's amazing. But the first year that they got it on Sky, Sky bought the rights and they're showing it. And people in England can see this for the first time. And there were just people putting together these web posts. You know the way people like collate tweets and they go, oh, well, look, this is what people were saying about this. But they put together these posts of people going, what the fuck is this game? This is fucking mental. This is incredible. What are they doing? What did the sticks? They're like, how do they have any teeth? All that kind of stuff. I don't know why I'm telling you about hurling now. Why are we talking about hurling?
I don't know, but it sounds, I've only seen bits and pieces, but it is an absolutely fascinating game.
I'm just saying that the replay will be on Sky Sports.
Ah, yes.
On October the 1st, Saturday, October the 1st. And I think that weekend Arsenal are playing, they could be playing Burnley, something like that, but they're not playing until the 2nd of October, so it's free for everybody to watch. Yeah, Arsenal are playing Burnley away on the 2nd of October. So the 1st of October, you'll be the Mayo guy and I'll be the Dublin guy, and we'll see how it all goes.
All fair game. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. How are you?
Well, that sounds terribly exciting. I'm good. I've had a lovely, restful weekend.
Good.
What a lovely Sunday I had watching my hometown of Watford on the telly against Manchester United.
I was watching a bit of that today. I saw a bit of it before I left, and then I was watching a bit of it on my phone via a streaming site because it was quite enjoyable. And then we were in the pub before the game, obviously, having a pint, and we were watching it 1-0 to Watford. Then it got to 1-1, and then we were like, oh, this is going to be like typical. And then, of course, Watford scored and made it 2-1, and just as we left the pub, I think did they get a penalty? Was that what it was?
I'm forgetting now. No, I think it got to 1-1. United scored, Rashford scored.
Yeah.
And then, ninety-fifth minute, they got a penalty, yeah.
Yes.
Zuniga scored coming off the bench, and then Marouane Fellaini. Basically, Watford brought on a player who I've never seen before, and his name was Success. Have you seen him?
Yeah, he played against us. He came on. Okay, fair enough.
Well, I only saw the highlights of that game. So he, Success came on, and lived up to his billing, really, with a brilliant run down the left. And Marouane Fellaini tripped him up in hilarious fashion, frankly, nearly as funny as his dyed hairstyle that he's sporting at the moment. And Troy Deeney took a penalty. I mean, I hope Alexis Sanchez was watching it, because he absolutely leathered the ball into the net.
Oh.
Just smashed it past De Gea.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that was it. 3-1, game over.
That was good. I enjoyed that. I enjoy watching Manchester United get beaten. I believe Mourinho was unhappy. He was blaming the officials. There was a bit
three
of
three defeats in a row for Manchester United now.
Specialist in what? I don't know.
No, taking his Chelsea form into United.
Yeah.
I saw a great tweet. I forget who it's from, but someone just had written special once as opposed to special one, which I really enjoyed.
No, it's good. And anything that makes Jose Mourinho unhappy is obviously a really good thing. There's no way around it. You can't dress it up in any other way. When Jose Mourinho is unhappy, normal people should be very happy. They should be pleased. They should take some comfort from his misery. I don't know what else to say other than it makes me really happy when he's unhappy. Am I a small man? Am I petty? Am I bitter? What is it? Or is it just, it feels normal to me. It feels normal to me as if, like, I'm hungry, therefore I'm going to eat something. When Mourinho's unhappy, I'm happy.
It's a tale as old as time, isn't it? It's, we love to see the bad guys get their comeuppance. And I don't think anyone out there could argue that Jose Mourinho is one of the good guys. You know, every great story has the kind of karmic retribution where someone, you know, gets their dues. And yeah. I think when Mourinho suffers a defeat, it just feels like the natural conclusion to his behaviour. So it's that's why it's so satisfying.
Yes, I agree. I agree. It's
and so
it's
infuriating
very
when good things happen to him.
Yeah, well, that's the converse. And we've lived through enough of that, I think, that it's now, it feels like we're getting something back, a little bit of a return on our, not investment, but on the pain we've had to suffer for him having a good time.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
We paid our dues, and the same is true of Manchester United more broadly, isn't it? We put up with them winning everything for such a long time. Now it's time to sit back and have a bit of a laugh at them, and it's ever so fun.
It is. And I think also when, you know, whatever Jose Mourinho might say about the officials or some of the decisions, you are the guy, motherfucker. You picked Fellaini and Rooney.
Yeah.
So fuck you. Don't fucking blame anyone else. That's it's like, no, come on.
Yeah. I mean, Rooney was extraordinary for United today. I mean, the worst I'd say I've ever seen him play.
Wow.
Quite how he's holding on to his place on that side when he's taken up a position where Pogba really should be playing, you know, that kind of creative number 10 role. You spend £100 million on a player to play him out of position. I mean, it's madness.
And long may it last.
Yeah, long may it continue. I'm delighted to see him in there.
Week in, week out. Yeah, did you see the Harry Kane thing?
Which thing was this? I don't think I did.
He got taken off injured. And if you check out the timeline of our friend at West Antone, he's got a vine of Harry Kane being stretchered off and he sucks his thumb. That's seriously. I've never seen anything like it.
Well, hang on. Was he taken off with a thumb injury?
No. His ankle, apparently. But he sits there on the stretcher and then just goes like,
oh my God, I'm watching it now.
His thumb. Look at it.
What is going on?
I don't know. He's sucking his thumb.
It can only be for comfort that he's so so distressed by his injury. That's absolutely maddening. Either that or, I mean, no, there's no other way around it.
It's either that or he's got like a little baggie of MDMA in his shorts.
I was going to say, he's got something on his thumb that he's like, oh, that's a bit more.
Dipped it into, yeah. He's
what
like,
could
drugs.
That possibly be?
I don't know. But it's funny looking, right?
Yeah, I mean, they played Sunderland today. Is it that he was hoping to get the taste of, I don't know, Kone off his thumb? I don't know either.
Oh my God,
Gilabodji, the other centre half, he had a little.
Everybody loves a little bit of Gilabodji, James.
Yeah, it's a delicacy apparently. I don't know, very strange, but obviously also sad to see Harry Kane injured. What a sad day all round.
It has been. It has been difficult. I think we should have maybe a moment's silence.
Okay.
So look, Arsenal. Arsenal
had a football match.
They did, and they won it 4-1 away from home. That's good, right?
I think undeniably so. I mean, and against a whole side that had been defying the odds and having a pretty decent season so far, certainly looked very solid. And we dismantled them. I mean, 4-1, I know at one point the game was kind of poised at 2-1 and felt like, I don't know, maybe there was a little bit of jeopardy injected into it, but really, this was a game where we missed a lot of chances. A penalty kick, you think of that one Alexis spooned over the bar. Mesut Ozil missed an absolute sitter, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Could have been anything, really. Could have been a real, real hammering. But 4-1 away from home, always a terrific result.
Yeah. So look, where do we start with it? Because it was pretty comfortable, even though I guess we could look at the team, we could pull it apart and say there are still a few issues, weren't there? You know, team selection, everyone's going, well, he's got to play Granit Xhaka. He's talked about Granit Xhaka in his press conference. He says he's going to be a huge, influential player for us. Now is the time to play Granit Xhaka. He's played Coquelin and Cazorla in two games in a row. You know, he might want to rotate that, you know, use the fullness of his squad. And he picked Coquelin and Cazorla again and played Alexis Sanchez up front. Now, I don't know if you can necessarily argue too much against selection decisions when you go away from home and win 4-1 after being away from home in the Champions League. Like, I don't think there's an awful lot of second guessing you can do there, but still, it's probably worth talking about. Alexis up front, how did you feel that went?
It very nearly could have been a hat-trick game, couldn't it? I mean, he scored two goals, missed a penalty, was involved in some key moments. I am amazed that he continues to persist with it. I mean, I suspect if Olivier Giroud had been fit, maybe it might have been different. I know we had Lucas Perez there and on the bench, but what I think is interesting about this team is that it kind of feels like the lineup he selected at Hull is going to be very close to the one he picks against Chelsea next weekend, because in between you've got the Capital One Cup game, but I think it would take something pretty special from someone in that Capital Cup. It's not called that anymore, is it?
It's definitely not the Capital Com Cup, James. It's definitely not called that.
No, it's called the EFL Cup now, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's going to take something pretty special from someone on Tuesday night, I think, to leap them up into that side. So I think Alexis playing there against Hull means he's pretty likely to play there against Chelsea. And Arsene's persistence with it, you know, a couple of weeks ago I thought it was just something he was doing to cover for while we signed someone, you know, until the end of the transfer window. But having used it against Paris and again against Hull, I don't know, is it more of a long-term consideration than that, do you think?
It seems to be all right, doesn't it? Because, yeah, like you say, he picked him against Paris Saint-Germain, he picked him against Watford away. He did have Lucas Perez as an option to play as a striker, and he could have played Alexis in one of the wide positions. It seems to be something that he's definitely trying to make work. And, you know, I thought he was a bit underwhelming, generally speaking, Alexis. I thought, you know, he should have scored that one that Walcott set up for him. I thought he dropped off a little bit too much. There were times where he was like in midfield, he was doing little dinky passes with Mesut Ozil. And you're going, well, who the fuck is up front? When we do get the ball wide, eventually, who's in there?
Well, you know, to answer that question,
go on,
and maybe put a positive spin on things, is there something to be said for the fact that maybe Alexis personally didn't have the most eye-catching game, but Alex Iwobi and Theo Walcott, who were playing in those wide forward positions, maybe profited a little bit from that. And when he dropped deep, were sort of able to get into those attacking spaces. I mean, Walcott obviously scored his goal. Iwobi was a threat throughout the match, I thought. So maybe there's something to be said for the way that trio functions rather than just looking at Alexis on his own.
I think that's a fair point. And certainly the manager said something about that after the game with Walcott in particular, is that he's got the ability to get in behind when Alexis drops deep. So maybe there is, you know, a tactical master plan here. Maybe Alexis dropping off and moving out of position isn't necessarily just Alexis being Alexis. It's part of a plan. Maybe he wants to, you know, drag the center halves a bit out of position so that someone like Walcott, someone like Iwobi can use the space. What it is.
I mean, it's a crazy comparison in some respects, but Barcelona played with Lionel Messi as a number nine in theory for the best part of 2-3 years, and he was very rarely stationed there. I think, you know, I suppose if you've got a system that serves that, it can work. But then that, you know, that he is also Lionel Messi, so it's a slightly different kettle.
He is pretty brilliant, you know, generally speaking. But I mean, you know, we can have reservations and we can look at it and go, his performance, generally speaking, wasn't really that. Maybe we're looking at it through the prism of, well, is this what we want a centre forward to do? What we expect a centre forward to do and what Arsene Wenger maybe wants the player in the centre forward position to do are two very different things. And ultimately, he's come out of it with two goals.
He has. And if you look at his record this season, you know, it makes for very good reading. I think he's played started four Premier League games, got three Premier League goals, one for one in the Champions League. So 4 in 5. I mean, he's looking very efficient, certainly, in terms of, you know, when he's getting those chances in the penalty area. And I think there's more to come from him in the position. I think he's still kind of learning it, especially in the Premier League. It seems like it might be something that we have to get accustomed to watching, because I think he's going to be there probably, as I say, for the Chelsea game next week and possibly beyond, if that goes well.
So, look, we're 1-0 up. Iwobi involved in the goal. Theo Walcott cross panned out to Iwobi. I thought it was initially Iwobi's goal, but obviously Alexis deflected it in. And then Alexis decided to take the penalty and missed it. I mean, it was a bad penalty. There's no two ways around that. It was just a bad penalty. And I think perhaps Arsene Wenger... Go on.
I was going to say, did you see, I think it was the Hull left back pointing to his goalkeeper about where Alexis was going to put it.
Yeah.
As Alexis was running up. Telegraphed, really.
Yeah, a little bit. It was not a good penalty. And given that Santi Cazorla scored two penalties this season, he should have taken it. I think Arsene Wenger was a little bit unhappy about the fact that went down, that Cazorla was the designated penalty taker. And I think, you know, if you're going to have issues deciding who's going to take penalties, decide it before you go out on the pitch. So, I mean, I think Cazorla should probably have just told him to fuck off and taken it himself. But, you know, there is that thing. He's the striker. Maybe he's feeling confident. You know, we've seen it plenty of times before. You can get away with it if you score it. If you don't score it, you just look like a dick.
I agree. But, you know, if you imagine that conversation and you think about what we know of Santi and what we know of Alexis, I kind of feel like there'd maybe only be one winner there. You know, if Alexis decides he wants to take that penalty, he's probably going to be taking it.
That's probably true, yeah.
It wasn't the best, was it? I mean, you know, Santi, as you say, scored the previous week, so, and, you know, probably should have taken his seniority and ultimately listened to the manager. That would have been ideal, wouldn't it?
Yes, but then, okay, so look, even so, they're down to 10 men just before half-time. Second half, we get the goal relatively early in the second half. Theo Walcott makes it 2-0. And after that, you know, I just felt like we made a lot of passes just for the sake of making passes. Even Arsene Wenger said afterwards, you know, we played without purpose to score another goal. You know, I found that a little bit worrying. Not worrying, I guess. Maybe we could be nitpicking. You could be accused of nitpicking given the result and given the final scoreline. But, you know, when you look at the fact that Hull got one back, it could have been worse. Like, if Livermore sent off, you could probably, if you're giving a penalty against Petr Cech, make a good case for sending Petr Cech off. And it could have been a lot different in the last 10, 15 minutes.
Well, I think we were the beneficiaries. I think that's been a rule change this summer, has it not?
Where
That last man's no longer a sending off. But, you know, when you look at those objectively, those two decisions, one being a sending off, one not, I think it's kind of like, it's interesting, isn't it, to weigh up, you know, why is what Livermore did... If Cech's is a foul, which I think is in some question, you know, because it's one of those annoying ones where the player kind of knocks the ball past him and charges him to, but once it is that as grave an offence as what Livermore did?
The keeper was standing right behind Livermore. So Livermore made the save, but the keeper was right there. I don't think Coquelin's shot was like screaming into the top corner or anything. It was a fairly tepid effort.
And he
just stuck his hand out and, you know, letter of the law, maybe it's a red card. But, you know, the fact that we were in a position where that kind of incident could have cost us or could have caused us more danger, you know, we really, what frustrated me was the fact that they were down to 10 men and we just passed it around midfield and we went backwards and cross and backwards and across. And we tried everything to go down through the middle. Lots of little, like, one-touch flicky, flacky bollocks in around the edge of the box. And we never really tried to stretch them. We never looked like we were out of second gear. We never tried to play with a bit more pace, a bit more urgency. And I know it's difficult when you're, you know, playing against 10 men who are sitting and trying to maintain their defensive shape. But the fact is, you do have an extra man and you've got the ability to pull them around. And we didn't really do that. And I thought, when they scored, I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. If they get another goal here, this is entirely our fault for just being a little bit complacent, thinking that, you know, we were going to win it and just keep the ball and, you know, not factoring in the vagaries of football. Just one good pass can cause you all kinds of problems. And that seemed to be the case. I mean, the reaction then, having conceded the goal, the reaction was, you can't argue with that. Like Alexis banged in the third and then Granit Xhaka spanked in a really brilliant fourth goal. But, you know, you shouldn't be on that knife edge, I don't think.
I don't think so. I wonder if, you know, it's difficult because we're against 10 men, really, which kind of negates any excuse. But I wonder if maybe it had something to do with the fact that we had played that sort of tricky game in Paris in midweek. Maybe there was
a
bit of legginess there that made us a bit more conservative in our approach. But really, you know, the game, although the final score shows the gulf between the two teams, it should never have been as tight as it was for those first 70 minutes or so in terms of the scoreline.
Mm.
Mm. We should have been out of sight, I thought, both probably by half time. Certainly once we went 2-0 up.
But still, 4-1 away from home, what can you say? You'd take that in a heartbeat if someone offered it to you before the game. So, you know.
Yeah, and some great goals. Like I obviously, Walcott's goal, a remarkable assist, wasn't it? A piece of brilliant skill.
He was great, wasn't he, Iwobi? From an attacking point of view, he was really so positive throughout.
I thought so. I mean, Arsene's spoken about him at length after the game, and I think what's so impressive about him is that he can kind of go any way with the ball at his feet. You know, he's someone who's got the power to and speed to beat a man, the skill. He's got the vision to look for a pass, and he's not afraid to take a shot on, which I really like about him. We've seen so many players come through at Arsenal who you feel like they're a little bit timid in front of goal. Not Iwobi. He's got the confidence to really, you know, have a go, basically, when it opens up for him. And that makes him such an unpredictable threat for the opposition and creates a bit of chaos in the back line, which is very, very welcome.
Yeah, I was very impressed. I mean, there were moments where I think, you know, there are certain things. People say, well, maybe he shouldn't be the guy who's got to be tracking back. But when you're being played out on the wide areas, I think there is a duty to do a bit more defensive work. That would be just a slight concern. And it's not even that he's not aware. There were just a couple of times where I felt like some of the tracking back was just a little bit half-hearted. Like, he could have kept going. He could have been a bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. He could have just fucking tried a bit harder. That's all. Which is to take nothing. Go on.
I noticed that in the second half, he was a little bit better. I did wonder if something had been maybe said at half time.
Yeah.
Because in that first half in particular, there were a few occasions when the Sunderland right back, you know, roared past him with a bit too much ease, really, for anyone's liking.
Mm.
But with a young player who's still learning the kind of tactical side of the game, it's quite easy to forgive that, because going forward, I thought he was exhilarating, really. And in a team with Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil, he was probably the most exciting and effective player, which is, for a guy of 20 who's an academy product, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, plus I think, generally speaking, he's going to end up as somebody playing more often, let's say in the Mesut Ozil role, than as a wide attacker. I think ultimately he's going to be a central player. He just strikes, because what you're saying, he can go either way. He's got a good shot on him. You know, he can do good work out on the flanks. But I think probably in the long term, he's going to end up more as somebody who can play off a striker, or somebody who can play in a more central role. So, you know, maybe the onus isn't on you as much there when you're playing that central area, but certainly when you're playing wide. And look, Monreal has taken some stick this season. I just think, you know, he's been a bit exposed also. Defensively, hasn't been as protected as he normally is. So that's a thing.
I think that's true. But I mean, so as I say, I love the goals. And the third and fourth, I mean, Alexis, he made it look simple, but the way he struck that ball with the outside of his foot to lift it up into that top corner, I really had a lot of time for that. And then Xhaka, I mean, that's not what we bought him for, but
yes, it
I'll
is.
Take a few of those.
Fucking yes, it is.
Well,
is that not why we bought him? You know, maybe that's part of why we bought him, because, you know, we do have central midfield players who will just make the pass.
You know, who can
keep the ball, and, you know, to give yourself a different threat. I mean, we talked about him a couple of weeks ago after the Watford game. We talked about how he provides a different threat because he can create from deep. But he also provides a different threat if he's a guy who can fuck the ball into the top corner from 30 yards, because nobody else seems willing to do that. Nobody else seems willing to have a go. You know, there were moments even during the whole game where you're going, oh, fuck, go on, just have a pop. Somebody have a pop. It's there for you to have a shot if you want. Like for Mesut Ozil, a couple of times it opened up and you're going, have a go. Just have a go. Don't always play the safe option. Don't always play the percentage pass. Have a go. And Xhaka certainly is willing to do that and has got the quality to do that. So maybe that gives defences something to think about as well.
Yeah, well, it was an incredible strike. I mean, yeah, I just thought it's one of those that you sort of he's travelling towards the edge of the penalty box, and watching it, you can't help but think, go on, have a shot. But as Arsenal fans, we're so used to players turning sideways and playing the simple ball that when he actually unleashed one, it was such a shock and what a rocket. I mean, yeah, what a way to open your account.
Yeah. Pretty brilliant. We're going to probably discuss his selection or lack of selection in part two in the questions.
I imagine there may be questions.
Yeah, maybe questions. But, I mean, do you see him, for example, starting on Tuesday against Nottingham Forest?
I think surely he has to now. I mean, you know, he hasn't started since the Watford game. That's right, isn't it? Three matches he's been on the bench for. And I think, yeah, he needs the minutes. And he'll be desperate to seize the opportunity. What did you make of his celebration? This kind of, you know, the shh finger. Who did you think that was aimed at?
I don't know. I don't give a fuck either, really. It's just like, okay, keep doing that. If that's a message to Arsene Wenger, I think the goal is more a message to Arsene Wenger than the celebration. I don't think Xhaka is the kind of guy, certainly he doesn't come across as the kind of guy who is, even if he's feeling a little bit unhappy about being on the bench, he's not going to like mouth off to his new manager at his new club after like less than 4 or 5 weeks of the season, you know? So I don't know that it was necessarily anything to do with Arsene Wenger. I think the goal, the fact that he came on, played well, and spanked one in from 30 yards, I think that's more of a message to the manager than anything else.
Yeah, I didn't interpret it as anything to do with the manager per se. I think it was more about the chatter that surrounds him and the fact that he's going to do his talking with the ball at his feet, and he certainly did that on Saturday.
Mm. All right, so look, a good weekend from our point of view for the most part. Not all the results went our way, but in terms of the response from the opening day of the season, we've won three in a row now, we're unbeaten in four. You know, the opening day was very disappointing, but it feels just a little bit like we're getting on the right track.
Yeah, certainly. And we're in fourth, guys. It's already panning out. But I think the results are better than the performances right now, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. Yeah.
Probably more important. So.
Of course, and I think there were positive signs from the whole game, even if they were down to 10 men. You know, I think there were positives to be taken from that. And
yeah, I'm not sure we've played better than that this season.
I think maybe the first 45 minutes against Watford was the best we've played.
Right, okay.
I would say.
I didn't see that full game, so
right.
I can't really comment on
that. Yeah, I would say the first half against Watford was the best we've played. But the whole game, certainly in terms of the way we defended, we didn't give them chances, even when they did have 11 men. There were positives there, you know, after what happened against Southampton, what happened against PSG, we weren't cut wide open. So from that point of view, that was a positive. So look, very quickly, the EFL Cup on Tuesday, tomorrow night, even though we're recording this on Sunday, making it sound. Anyway, Tuesday night, we're playing Nottingham Forest. Nicholas Bentner, Henry Lansbury. But a chance for the manager to rotate his squad quite considerably, I would say.
Surely he will. I mean, the squad is sort of deeper than it has been for some time. I mean, this EFL Cup, you know, has traditionally been an opportunity for younger players, but we've got so many senior pros that we're looking to get a game. I'm not sure how many youngsters we'll get a look in.
Should we try pick a team?
Yeah, let's have a go. Well, you'd think it'd be David Ospina, certainly, in goal. That, you know, after his excellent performance against PSG, isn't too much of a worry. The defence is kind of the trickiest. Kieran Gibbs has only made
he's
one sub-appearance so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, but he's
so
gonna, Gibbs is going to come in, and I think we'll have Gabriel and Holding at centre-half. But is Matthew Debussy alive? Does he still exist?
I'm not sure that either he or Carl Jenkinson are alive in any tangible way.
Carl Jenkinson is alive because he was at the screening of the game at the Emirates the other day, and he was giving it some bants, apparently, on the microphone.
Bants.
Yeah, but is Debussy alive? I mean, look, I don't want to like start a ridiculous rumor here, but has Arsene Wenger killed Matthew Debussy and buried his body somewhere in the woods?
I don't think that's ridiculous. I mean, it's probably not a rumour. It may well have happened. He's certainly not, doesn't seem to be partaking in first team training. There's some talk of an injury.
So if he's not around, who plays right back? I mean, do you play Hector again?
Well, this is where it gets complicated. You could play Hector again, or I do wonder if maybe you play Holding there and you put a bit of seniority in at the back with Koscielny. I don't know. Or you have got Christian Bielik as well, who could play at centre-half.
Oh, of course, yeah.
A young player who's impressed in pre-season.
Yeah.
I think it's probably going to be Bellerin asked to play again.
Right.
About yourself.
I don't know. I mean, I think you're right. Maybe we could use Bielik and push Holding out. But I think if he's going to use Rob Holding, he'd rather use him as a centre-half.
So maybe
I don't know if there's somebody in the youth team who could step up. So there's a big unanswerable force. Midfield, I'm guessing Xhaka.
Xhaka and El Neni.
And who's going to play the creative, the Ozil role? Because Mesut Ozil's not going to play.
Well, your options include, I mean, there's Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain could play in a central role, potentially. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at a younger player, maybe The Jeff?
I
don't know. I don't know. I think, do we think Giroud will be available?
Yeah, but if it's not Giroud, it's going to be Perez, I think. So I think we're going to see...
It could be both of them, though, couldn't it? Mm-hmm. It could be Perez wide. He played wide as a sub briefly against Hull.
Yeah.
I think they'll play. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain will play, won't he, in some capacity.
Yeah. And then there is the Jeff, of course, as well. So
yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the Jeff will start. Hang on, Xhaka, Elneny. I don't know who's going to play that number 10 role.
Yeah.
Difficult to say. I mean, the other option is that you play Oxlade-Chamberlain centrally, and then you play Giroud up top, and your wide men are, you know, Perez and Akpom, who's played wide at a point in his career. That's an option, I guess. Mm.
Yeah, we'll have to see if Giroud's toe injury is recovered in time for him to play. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see who he picks and who he brings in from the academy team, who's the youth team players that he brings in. You know, someone like Chris Willock, for example, who could play. Who else? I don't really know.
Well, I think Willock's definitely one. I think Bielik will be one. Akpom. I mean, the interesting thing is for these guys, particularly in the case of an Akpom, he hasn't gone out on loan, and he can't go out on loan now until January because there's no more emergency loans to the lower leagues. And
this is his chance, isn't it? Yeah.
This is it. But when you lay out the team like that and you look at maybe Giroud needing minutes, maybe Lucas needing minutes, you wonder, you know, how much of a chance is he going to get? Who else is there to consider? Yaya Sanogo, we believe, still injured. He's buried somewhere with Mathieu Debuchy.
Yeah. I mean, there's Ainsley Maitland-Niles, who had a very good season last year for Ipswich. Again, he's not somebody who's going to have a chance to play first-team football apart from this competition. So it depends how much seniority he brings in. But look, it's going to be interesting anyway. I think it'll be fun to see what sort of a team he puts out and how they perform on Tuesday night.
Very exciting, very exciting. And great to see your friend of mine, Nicholas, again.
He is, of course, the greatest striker that ever lived, and everybody should be grateful and welcome to have the opportunity to see him do his stuff. He's going to do something, isn't he? He's going to do something.
Oh, God, I dread to think what he's going to do. Yes, I think he is. Imagine.
He's going to score, and then he's going to run over to the Arsenal dugout, and he's going to rub his Mickey all over the back of the dugout. Like it's a taxi.
That would be an absolute classic move from Nick Manor. That's one of his trademarks, of course.
All right. Well, look, we'll see what happens on Tuesday night. For now, though, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with part two and your questions after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. But James, before we continue, we should talk a little bit about what's happening next weekend. A live Arscast Extra in New York City.
Start spreading the news. We're on our way.
Yes, we are. We're going to be in the Barleycorn, which is, I just looked it up here. Goddamn. It's 23 Park Place, New York. So if you're in the New York area, New York vicinity, we're going to be doing this podcast on Sunday around lunchtime. Not 100% sure of the kickoff time just yet, but probably around midday, 1 o'clock on Sunday in the Barleycorn. Arsenal will be playing Chelsea on the Saturday, the day before that. So we're going to be watching the game, and then obviously we'll talk about the game and whatever the hell might happen. Obviously, Diego Costa is going to do something despicable, which we'll all hate. And who knows how it's going to go apart from that. But we'll be in the Barleycorn. So if you want more details, check out facebook.com/ArsenalNYC. They have all the details, and we're going to be there. So if you're around, please feel free to come along. It'll be fun.
Yeah, terribly exciting. And according to Google, the Barleycorn is an ample tavern with stylish wood and stone decor, offering many craft beers and an elevated grill menu.
Well, look, so, I think those are the things that we look for when we go and do a podcast in a place, isn't it? The elevated grill.
It didn't have those things before. We just demanded them.
Yeah, that was part of our rider, yeah. Get us those or we're not doing it.
If there's not stylish wood and stone decor, we're not getting on that plane.
Yeah, we don't want any old wood. We want stylish wood.
That's it.
Yeah.
We don't have any old decor. It's got to be stone.
Yeah.
But in absolute seriousness, very excited. It'd be lovely to see as many of you as possible
there. Yeah. Please do come on down. And if you need details, as I said, facebook.com/ArsenalNYC, or give us a shout on Twitter at Arsblog and at Gunnarblog. We'll do our best to answer the questions. If not, we can point you certainly in the right direction. So that's next Sunday, September 25th, in the Barleycorn, Park Place, New York City.
Woo! Big time.
Big time. That's good. All right. Will we do questions?
Let's do. We usually do, don't we?
We do. This is the whole part of the show where we do the questions.
It'd be a shame to break from tradition at this stage.
It would be. And then instead, sing. Just sing to people. That would be really bad, actually. Yeah.
Just talk about our problems. I know we do that, to be fair, quite a lot.
We do. Yeah.
did you see what happened to Emmanuel Adebayor, by the way?
No.
The latest twist in the sad tale of Emmanuel Adebayor. He was set to sign for Lyon as a replacement for Alexandre Lacazette, who's picked up a fairly significant injury. That Arsenal DNA obviously was present there all along. But they pulled out of a move to sign him at the last minute because he wanted to go and play for Togo in the African Cup of Nations, and they said, no, thank you, and turned their back on the deal. So,
right,
yet another Arsenal favourite suffering some sad news this weekend. What,
blimey,
karma's really kicking in a big way this September.
Wow, Well, you would have thought that, yeah, look, it's difficult, isn't it? If he wants to play for Togo, then you can understand that. But, I mean, they can't stop him, really, can they, from international duty. But I guess, you know, they can not sign him, which is what they've done. So
that's what they've done. So poor old Emmanuel, back to the drawing board.
If anyone is looking for a late call-up for your five-a-side, for your Paraleague team, I know this guy.
I think Nottingham Forest might well go for it. See if they can get it done before Tuesday, pairing with Nicholas Bendtner. Can you imagine?
Oh, that would be amazing.
The fireworks. They hated each other, didn't they?
Yeah, that would be great. The two of them just kicking the shit out of each other.
If there's one thing they hate more than each other, it's Arsenal. So,
well, you know, in fairness to Bendtner, he did have Adebayor twigged as a bit of a cunt before most people. So
that's true. That's true. He's got very good instincts, hasn't he? Just not in front of goal, sadly.
All right, I'll do a question, right? This one comes in from TMG, who is at Just Another Arse. And he wants to know, what would you rather, Mourinho to get the sack before Christmas or Stoke to be relegated?
Oh, I think Mourinho to get the sack, you know. Mm. Although, here's the twist in that particular one.
Right.
If he's doing so badly that he's in contention to get the sack, I'll probably want him to stay.
Yeah, it's
happened with Chelsea last season. He was, you know, you wanted him to get sacked, but you also were like, but this is brilliant. This is hilarious watching him, you know, suffer and watching Chelsea implode. I probably won't want that to end. I'll want to drag it out as long as possible. And to be rid of Stoke, there would be a certain pleasure there, wouldn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this Premier League would be a safer place, a prettier place, a nicer place. I think I'd still have to take Jose being sacked, simply because if he were to be sacked from another top club in England after another pretty disastrous spell, surely we'd be rid of him for a good while at least.
Yeah, for a couple of months anyway.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I mean, you see, the whole thing about Mourinho being sacked by Christmas does not preclude Stoke going down. I think Mark Hughes is obviously doing a tremendous amount of work in that regard. He seems to be fulfilling that ambition for us. So thank you, Mark Hughes. Keep it up. We all applaud what you're doing. But yeah, definitely the humiliation of Mourinho being fired by Manchester United after being fired by Chelsea would be just fucking hilarious. It would be amazing. So I would definitely want to see that happen. Because the only reason that it could happen is if things are just so appalling. He would have had to lose the dressing room completely. The way he did at Chelsea, it was obvious he lost the dressing room at Chelsea. Gus Hiddink came in and wasn't a complete cunt, and the players started playing for him. And that was fairly obvious. So if it was a case that he managed to completely lose the Manchester United dressing room before Christmas and results were so bad that he had to be sacked, imagine what it would take for the Manchester United board, having brought him in, having trumpeted him as, you know, the guy who was going to bring them back to the top, having given him how much money to fucking spend?
I don't know. I mean, God knows. God,
like 100 million on Pogba. 100 million on Pogba. The centre half guy cost, what, 25 million?
Oh, maybe potentially more than that, baby. Yeah.
Who else did they bring in? Ibrahimovic, that's like an investment in wages of fucking £12 million.
Fortunes. And then Mkhitaryan as well.
Mkhitaryan, yeah. So again, you know, £30 million. Having given him that much money, imagine how bad it would have to be for them to like go, oh, fuck, we've got no choice. We can't, there's nothing else we can do but fire him. It would be amazing. Like one of the best things that ever happened in football. So I'm 100% on for Mourinho being sacked by Christmas. And then Stoke can do what the fuck they do. Who gives a fuck? I'll be too busy laughing.
That's it. I think I mean, you know, I've got my issues with Stoke, but I think I'd gladly put those to one side to see Mourinho get his comeuppance.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be glorious.
Oh, God. So good. So good.
Next question?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's have this one. I like the one. This is phrased. We had a lot of questions like this, but it's Halfa Dinari, and they ask, why do you honestly think Arsene isn't starting Xhaka Honest answers only, please.
Oh, I was going to make up a big story.
Yeah, I know. No lying. Honest answers only.
Honest? Who's got time for honesty?
Well, the problem is the honest answer is that we don't know.
Well, I think he spoke about it at length in his press conference before the game, and he talked about, you know, partnerships, and he likes pairings that work together, and he's being a bit cautious after losing the opening game of the season. So he knows that Coquelin and Cazorla has worked for him in the past. It obviously hasn't functioned as well as it might have done this season so far.
Xhaka, it was better against Hull, though, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was. I thought Coquelin was really good, actually, against Hull. And I guess he's just sort of looking at it as, well, look, I've signed this guy on a 4 or 5 year deal, and it's only 4 or 5 weeks into the season. And I think we have a little bit more anxiousness when it comes to seeing new players because, well, you know, we like new players. They're good. You spend £35 million on a player. You're going, well, put him in the team. And, you know, the idea of Arsene Wenger spending £35 million on a player who isn't going straight into the first team is very confusing, right? It's really quite confusing because that's a huge investment for him. It's a very significant amount of money. It's the second biggest transfer that he's ever made after Mesut Ozil. Is more or less on a par with Alexis Sanchez and Mustafi. So you're kind of going, well, why have you spent all that money if you're not going to use the guy straight away? I think he's just being overly cautious. That's all. I don't think there's anything too sinister about it. I don't think there's like anything where he's going, well, I don't want this player. Stupid Arsenal board going out and buying a player I didn't want, and now I'm going to have to use him. You know, that we know that's not how it works, right? So I just think he's easing him into action, maybe with a bit more caution than we would like, maybe with a bit more more caution than is actually needed. But I just think that's what it is. That's my honest, honest answer.
I think we all appreciate that.
Good.
Do you want to know my honest answer?
Of course.
I don't know. No, I think if I had to hazard a guess, I would say that I think a lot of it's actually to do with the situation with the defence. I think the fact that he's had to throw Mustafi in straight away. And so have a new partnership bedding in the back four. He probably doesn't want to then, in front of that, put another brand new partnership.
Mm.
So the fact that he's had to do that in the defence means he's less inclined to do so in the midfield. And I think once Mustafi's more settled, maybe that's when we'll see Xhaka getting more of a run.
That is a very good point. That's a very interesting point, all right? Because maybe if it was behind, if he had Mertesacker and Koscielny behind, he'd be more inclined then to put in the new guy, yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
He doesn't want to destabilise things too much, especially if he's with the situation at centre forward. He's mixing it up and playing Alexis there. So he wants something that's kind of resembles what he had last year and the year before. So I think that's what motivates it. But if Xhaka keeps doing what he did at the weekend, I mean, he'll have to throw that plan.
Well, what he did say was like, you know, he's not in the team yet, but when he does get in there, he's going to be he's going to have a huge impact. Is what he said. He didn't just say, well, I'm not sure about this guy. He's like very positive about what he can bring to the team. It's just, you know, when he's going to allow him to do that. So, you know, I'm not that worried about it or freaked out about it, even if I would have liked to have seen him start against Watford. But as I said, you know, we ended up winning 4-1. So you can't really complain too much about the team that he picked when it goes out and wins 4-1. So.
Absolutely.
All right, so while we're on the subject of Granit Xhaka, Lex Carlin, who is at Alexis Carlin, he would like to know, was that the best first goal since Bergkamp's?
Oh, what a lovely question. Bergkamp's was against Southampton, was it?
It was.
I mean, since then, I mean, Thierry Henry's first goal also against Southampton?
It was.
Away, and that was a brilliant goal.
That was a great goal, yeah.
It's not the best first goal since Bergkamp. Well, I remember, was Robin van Persie's first goal rather excellent? Do you remember that?
Was that one where he kind of cut in from...
Yeah, it was a late goal. I'm not sure if it was his first, but I feel like he was on the corner of the penalty box at Highbury.
Right.
And he bent it into the top corner. I am... furiously googling.
Yeah, I'm going to do it now as well.
But I can't yet find it.
Okay,
top five Arsenal goals, could it be that? So that's a contender. If I'm right about that, I may not be. 2004 right. would have been.
Robin Van Persie, 2005, 2006. When did he, 2004, 2005? Was that when he made his debut? I think it might have been.
He made his competitive debut on 27th of October, scoring Arsenal's opening goal in a 2-1 League Cup win over Manchester City.
Well, that was also the game in which Danny Carbassian scored.
Yeah. So that's not the goal I'm thinking of. So that doesn't
However,
count.
His first league goal came in the next game where we had... We were losing to Southampton 2-1.
Southampton again.
We were losing 2-1. Rory Delap had scored two goals. I don't know if he just threw them straight in, but certainly Rory Delap had scored two goals. Thierry Henry had put Arsenal ahead in the 67th minute. Delap scored in the 80th minute and the 85th minute. And Robin Van Persie came off the bench to replace Freddie Ljungberg. And then he scored that goal, yeah.
Yeah. Right, so that was his first league goal. That was a good goal, as I recall.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of any other contenders since Bergkamp.
Yeah.
Does anything spring to mind for you?
No. What was Arshavin's first goal?
I don't know. Well, I think he scored that brilliant goal against Blackburn that I absolutely loved.
The one where he lifted it over the keeper, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think that was his first. Nor was his first the part of the whole Liverpool.
No.
Oh, maybe it was against Blackburn, Arshavin's first Arsenal goal. Yeah, according to Google, it was anyway.
Right, that was a good one.
Let me have a look. Yeah, that's a great goal. He gets the ball on the left flank, heads towards the penalty area, little shimmy inside, and then lifts it somehow around and over the rotund form of Paul Robinson.
It was a big target, all right.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good goal. But I can't think of many more spectacular than Xhaka's.
No.
It reminded me a bit of that moment where, I know it wasn't scored in an Arsenal shirt, but the summer we signed Tomasz Rosicki, he was playing in an international tournament for Czech Republic, and he absolutely smashed one in from
but
that
his,
kind of distance.
His first goal was fucking brilliant as well. I think Rosicki's first goal was away in the Champions. It could have been against Dortmund.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good
one. That was a great goal.
Yeah.
That was a great goal.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I'm not sure that any of these are better than Xhaka's, I have to say, just in terms of the sheer velocity of the shot.
Yeah. I'm trying. I'm sure there's something we're missing, but...
Oh, Mesut Ozil's first Arsenal goal.
Was that not against Napoli?
Yeah, that was pretty special.
That was a good goal. Yeah, it was a good
cushion
goal.
Volley.
Yeah, it was a very nice goal. I wonder what Podolski's and Giroud's first goals for Arsenal were. Podolski was against Liverpool.
Giroud's was against Coventry in the League Cup.
It was a nice goal, actually. It was a chip, a bit of a chippity doodah. But again,
I think
he
missed a penalty prior to that in the game.
Right.
Podolski first Arsenal.
I think he
goal.
Scored his first goal against Liverpool on the opening day of the season. Remember the game when Diaby played an amazing? He was amazing in midfield. And everyone went, oh, yeah, if only Diaby would stay fit.
I think that was our second game of the season, maybe. But I don't know. But yeah, that was his first goal, definitely.
Yeah. Who else apart from that? I can't think of any.
Cazorla? Like,
what was Santi's first goal?
It wasn't at West Ham, was it?
Where he got a hat-trick?
Do you remember that goal? That was an excellent goal, 30 yards out at West Ham. No, he scored in the Liverpool game as well.
Oh, he did, yeah. Remember, Santi used to, like, take shots from distance. Come on, Santi.
He used to score from open play.
Yeah.
The commentator said against Hull that if he scores his next goal as a penalty, he'll break a Premier League record in terms of scoring only from penalties. I think it'll be something like 8 in a row.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. He obviously didn't know that. Or he would definitely have
taken the penalty.
Or maybe it's not a record you want. I don't know.
I don't know. If I was the penalty taker, seriously, and someone tried to take it off me, I'd be like, no, fuck off. I'm the penalty taker. You can't have the ball. Go away.
I was going to ask if Mikel Arteta's first Arsenal goal was that free kick, but it wasn't.
Oh, the one where Arsene Wenger talked about his tiny feet?
Yeah. Apparently he scored in a 4-3 defeat against Blackburn.
Oh, yes.
I've got bad memories of that game.
Oh, that was terrible. Do you remember, like, somebody got roasted on the halfway line, I can't remember, and then did Giroud score an own goal? Someone scored an own goal. Oh, God, that was an awful game.
I've got grim memories of that match, yeah. It's the one that I sort of could Google and find out more about it, but I feel like bad things went on. And it's probably for the best that I don't know.
Yeah, we've forgotten that one. And it's best left forgotten, I think.
It's best left forgotten. But what was Arteta's goal? Oh, it was just a nice sort of finish arriving on the edge of the box. That was it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, well, we've had a lovely trip down memory lane here, but I'm not sure.
If we're forgetting something, please let us know. But I think maybe it is the best opening goal since Bergkamp.
What about David Bentley? Was that his debut? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Beautiful chip in the FA Cup against Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was David Bentley.
Yeah, forget it. Yeah. Forget it.
All right.
okay, well, let's have another question. I'll be fascinated to hear your take on this.
Really?
Patanjali Power, and he asks, are we seeing the Joel Campbellisation of Theo? He's tracking back and attempting tackles.
We're seeing something from Theo Walcott that we didn't see last season, that's for sure. There's certainly a commitment to his play that wasn't there. Whether it's confidence, whether it's him just redoubling his efforts. I think he's had a pretty okay start to the season, to be honest. You know, there was some good and bad against Hull. There was one moment where he was put through in the second half and he tried a cross and he put it out for a goal kick. And there were a couple of moments, I think I noticed you mention it on Twitter, where he didn't necessarily control the ball as well as he could have. And the reaction from Mesut Ozil was very obvious.
Yeah,
there was oh, gosh, what is he doing?
There's a couple of those.
But generally speaking, this season, he's been much more committed. He's tried harder. He's worked harder. He's scored a couple of goals. And whether it's the Joel Campbellization or not, I'm not 100% sure. But I do wonder maybe if somebody, whether it was Arsene Wenger or somebody else, said to him, look, you know, you're actually probably a bit lucky to be still around this season. So, you know, it's time to put in the extra effort. And to be fair to him, he was posting videos, wasn't he, on Instagram of him doing extra stomach crunches and, like, playing with massive balls.
Yes.
I mean, medicine balls, James.
Oh, right. Okay. Fine. But, yeah, I completely agree. I think I'm surprised that he's turning over what seemingly is a new leaf after 10 years with the club. We're seeing things that we haven't seen for some time. And I don't know, do you think maybe it's connected to a bit of certainty about his role in the side? I mean, he seems to be focused on this right wing position, and it's benefiting him there.
Again, this is the confusion that exists because I don't know why. Remember, you know, Theo Walcott said, I don't want to be a striker anymore. And Arsene Wenger said, well, his defensive work isn't good enough to play on the right-hand side. So Arsene Wenger's reaction to the thing that he himself said is to pick him there pretty much every week since the season has begun. So I don't quite understand it. I don't pretend to understand it or to know exactly what's going on. But, you know, look, the very least you can ask from a player is that they give you 100%. And I think a lot of the frustration actually regarding Theo Walcott was, look, people have been well aware of his technical issues for quite some time, right? When he clubs the ball out of play and runs it out for a goal kick, we're not surprised because we've seen him do that from the very first time he got into the Arsenal team. It's part of what he does. But it was the stuff like jumping out of the way of the tackles and the lack of commitment and the lack of just, you know, being not up for it, I guess, for want of a better phrase, you know, putting himself on the line a little bit for his team. And maybe we're seeing him do that this season. And look, that you can't argue with that. There's a long season to go. And I still think that that's a position in this team that we could improve. But if he's prepared to put in the hard work and if it results in some goals and some assists, I mean, I think he should have had an assist at least for Alexis. That was a terrible miss by Alexis. If we're seeing some end product from his football again, then that's not a bad thing.
No, I agree. It's positive, really. And I think, you know, he's been pretty efficient as well in terms of when he's had chances. He's done all right with them. So at the moment, he's worth his place in the side.
All right, here is a question from Victor Souza at V_Felipe_. And he wants to know, Monreal isn't in his best form yet. Do you have any concerns?
Well, I think, as you said earlier, he hasn't been protected massively well, certainly not by Iwobi at the weekend. He's had Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in front of him before that. We know the kinds of problems he's had defensively. So I think that's probably a factor. I mean, what age is Monreal now? He's 30.
Yeah.
He'll be 31 in February. So he's not exactly at the age where you expect a player to fall off a cliff or anything like it, you know? I think he's got a good few years left at the top level. And I actually think he's had some pretty... He did pretty well against Hull, and against Southampton, he was isolated and made some pretty important challenges. I know he got a bit unlucky with the one from which they scored the free kick, but I think what we're seeing is that he's been exposed, but he's standing up to that challenge relatively well. And I think in a team that functions better defensively, we'll see something more like the Montreal that we saw last season.
Sure, I agree entirely with that, and I have nothing to add to it.
Well, there we go. Yeah. That was a quick and easy one.
Yeah.
Well, let's have... this is from Benjamin Draper. And I wonder what you make of this. He says, is Alexis up front part of his contract negotiations?
No. No, I don't think
no.
so. I don't think that's got anything to do with it.
I'm not even sure he'd want to play there, to be honest, if it was up to him.
I don't think so either. I don't think that would be part of the reason why he's being picked there. I think he's being picked there because the manager is looking for something specific from his team, and perhaps from he's trying to, as you pointed out earlier, maybe trying to find a trio even up front that works well together. But I don't think it's got anything to do with his contract. No, I don't think that's a factor at all. Like, in the sense that, like, he's demanding to play there. This is why...
We saw stories of about Theo Walcott, didn't we, a few years ago when he was getting a run through the middle and Arsenal was saying he will, and then he signed a new deal, and then suddenly that kind of didn't come to pass. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't think things like that are ever really part of contract negotiations, are they? I mean, you play where the manager needs you to play. That's the deal, right?
Yeah, exactly. Play where you're picked, and I think that's about the size of it. So I think Alexis's issues with his contract don't really have anything to do with where he's playing.
No.
Apart from if you want to like expand it and say it's Arsenal in London, maybe that's where his issue is, but we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. So
yeah, one to watch maybe.
All right, Kyle Holton wants to know, why was the red card a circle?
Yes, I don't know. They've been rebranded, presumably.
I guess. But by who? By why? For what? For what's the reason? Why?
Well, the Premier League's had an overhaul, hasn't it? It hasn't got a sponsor anymore. There's no Barclays anymore. The Lions looks different.
I think
the Premier League anthem's different.
How the fuck does the Premier League not have a sponsor?
I think, just decided that they didn't need one anymore because they got so much bloody money.
Right.
And they were like, they want to preserve the integrity of the brand. I think I'm right about that. I think it's now just the Premier League.
We should, this would be amazing. Imagine if we could sponsor the Premier League and it was called the Arsecast Extra Premier League.
That would be great.
That would be pretty awesome. I'm not sure we could afford it, but...
I mean, I don't know what Barclays were paying, but I suspect...
It's probably a bit beyond what we could afford.
However many people start using Cornerstone razors, I think we're going to struggle to sponsor the Premier League. But let's give it a go.
Cornerstone.co.uk/arseblog. We could be the sponsors of the Premier League if you guys shave more often. So look,
exactly.
Not trying to put any pressure on you. But yeah,
Which circle, scruffy bunch.
Yeah, but maybe then the yellow card should be a different shape. What shape should the yellow card be? If the red card is a circle, what shape should the yellow card be?
I don't know, a semicircle? And then you hold up two semicircles,
ooh,
and when it joins together, then you flip it round, and on the back they're red.
Right. I like
nice.
It. Yeah.
Or it could be like an origami thing where like you fold them together and they make another shape. I don't know.
I think it should be a hectagon.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, I guess because a hectagon is a 100-sided polygon. And I would just like right. something that's got 100 sides.
Wow.
It looks pretty much like a circle, though.
Right. I mean, why do you think they've gone for a circle? Why do you think they were like...
I don't know. I mean, wouldn't it be awesome if it was in the shape of, like, a hand giving a middle finger? Like, that's your red card. Get off.
Yeah.
Like a circle, it's sort of stop, isn't it? I wouldn't leave the pitch. I'd be going, I'm stopping. You just told me to stop. I can't move. You just said stop. I don't know.
That's true. It's a stop sign,
yeah.
isn't it? Yeah. I listen, I prefer the classic, the top pocket square card. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
But, you know, the game's gone, as they keep saying. red cards are round now.
They keep fucking with it. Maybe you just have a triangle for a yellow card or, you know, I don't know.
It's quite interesting they still have practical cards, don't they? You think they'd have like a bit of technology that, you know, they press a button and it's a yellow light or a red light or whatever. But no.
No.
They've got the old bits of card in the top pocket.
Yeah. Imagine if it was like a really, really, really thin piece of yellow card. And in order for it to show it, the referee had to run over to the linesman and stretch it out. Like for ages.
Nice.
That would be amazing. I'd
that
like
would
that.
Be cool.
Yeah. I'd like some of that.
That'd
just
be great.
Yeah,
well,
a bit of variety, bit of difference.
That. Yeah. If when we sponsor the Premier League, that's what will happen.
Absolutely. We'll make sure that the cards are the entertainment. None of this football bullshit.
Yeah. I'd might have like the king, ace of spades on it, whatever, king of hearts.
Have you got one more?
I've got one more.
Right.
It's a tricky one.
Oh,
it's
no.
from Johnny Stacey, and it refers back to what we were saying about Harry Kane earlier. He asks, at Johnny Stacey 1, would you rather suck Harry Kane's thumb or John Terry's big toe?
Oh, my God.
Just be glad it's his toe. Just be glad it's his toe. Harry Kane's thumb or John Terry's big toe?
That's pretty disgusting. I think I would have to suck Harry Kane's thumb.
Oh, God, even you saying it unsettled me.
I know it is. It's disgusting. But imagine what John Terry's big toe looks like. The big toe of a man who's been playing professional football for, whatever, 20 years?
Yeah.
It's got to be disgusting, right? It's got to be one of the worst toes you've ever seen.
Oh, God.
And maybe Harry Kane's thumb is covered in MDMA so I can at least get off my tits. Whereas with John Terry's big toe, it would be just like a... Oh, could you imagine the nail? Even if there is a nail, there might not be a nail on it, James.
I don't think it looks like a nail.
It's either like so thick and yellow.
Or that's just how I'm picturing it.
Or it's not there. There's no nail there at all. Just like a squishy mess. A squishy kind of, remember that's where I, like...
My head, there is a nail, but it's like it's yellow and like ridged.
Yeah, that's how a nail would be if it was there. But I suspect it's probably not there at all.
Maybe.
Whoa.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose I should answer this as well.
Mm.
It's got to be the thumb, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's got to be the thumb. And maybe you would get a sort of a satisfying whiff of Jilabodgy off it. And that would make it all worthwhile.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one glimmer of hope that we have.
The saving grace.
What a disgusting question to end the podcast with.
Well, I thought it seemed appropriate.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, thank you very much indeed for listening. As always, we're going to be back next week. We will have an Arscast Extra for you, which will be recorded live in New York City. So please, if you're in New York, it's not too much trouble or difficult for you to come along and join us. We'll be talking into microphones, this kind of nonsense, which you've all come to know and expect. But there'll be beer and, of course, James, stone decor.
Oh, that beautiful stone decor.
Mm. We're looking forward to that.
It's worth coming for that alone, I would say.
Absolutely. We will have an Arscast this week as well, but it will be probably out for you on Thursday because I'm traveling, obviously, towards the end of the week. So keep your ears out for that. But again, thanks very much indeed for listening. Apologies for images and visions of John Terry's toe. I mean, it's just...
horrific.
It's horrific.
Truly horrific.
It is horrific. But right now, I'm going to go drink a beer and we'll leave it there. Thanks very much indeed. We'll catch you on the next one.
Bye bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.